Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of For the Love of Astrophysics. Today we'll mix history and science with a journey through quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics is a weird science to say the least. I'm sure anyone familiar would really wonder which person came up with such concepts when we can't even explain the backing for them. The wave function, the concept of superposition, or even how probability plays into everything. Where do these ideas come from? Now, there are many names associated with the complex beast that is quantum mechanics, all of who have played a role in its progression. From Max Planck to Louis de Broglie to Erwin Schrödinger, the notion of quantized energy states transformed to a beautiful wave function describing particles and their behavior. Let's start with a little context to our story of quantum mechanics. Some background of what was happening in the world with regards to waves and particles. Our story begins in the late 1600s, an era with horse-driven carriages and electricity just making its move. Sir Isaac Newton comes up with what he called his corpuscular theory of light. Now, the suspicion regarding light was this early, okay? Everyone thought of it as a wave. We knew of refraction and reflection, diffraction, whatnot. But he argued that since no other wave that we knew of seemed to travel in perfectly straight lines of reflection, light is actually showing a sort of particle-like behavior. Perhaps there were these particles, corpuscles of light, that were just moving in straight lines incredibly fast. Now, the explanation of various wave-like phenomena of light became more particle-led now. So scientists such as Fresnel and Huygens started explaining how this particle kind of light could be applied to stuff like refraction and diffraction. Now we reach our favorite Young's double slit experiment in 1801. What Thomas Young showed to the world was that light actually was a wave, since it showed what we call an interference pattern, something that was exclusive to waves. Now, this challenged Newton's predominant corpuscular theory, and now everyone accepts that light is a wave because it's showing an interference pattern, and only waves show interference patterns. Now, this is only going to get more and more messed up, or actually just complex and interesting depending on how you look at it. As we move on, we are reaching closer and closer to the true birth of a quantum theory. So quantum mechanics was a theory that formed through the early 1900s and was the progressive work of many physicists who were studying other phenomena. In fact, a lot of theories in physics emerge as people study other phenomena. So we'll go through the most notable and important set of additions to the progressive idea of quantum mechanics, also talking about a lot of interesting problems in physics that scientists would study, which would seem to do nothing with quantum mechanics. Let's start our journey through quantum mechanics. It's the year 1900, and Max Planck has just released his groundbreaking paper on black body radiation. As the name would suggest, this was a paper detailing a mathematical model for the radiation of something known as a black body. Now, a black body is not a visibly black body, like a black hole. It's something that emits electromagnetic radiation of all frequencies, like our sun. So I would get UV light, infrared radiation, X-rays, gamma rays, and of course, visible light of all colors. Now, black bodies became a popular area of study amongst physicists since they tried to explain the various patterns they saw in the radiations. So the sun is one such example of a black body, but even a piece of really, really hot metal will show these properties. So we went further to study it through heating metals through high temperatures. That's actually a very cool thing here. When we heat a black body to a high temperature, it obviously emits a lot of radiation of all frequencies, like ultraviolet radiation, right? But what we found is that the most prevalent frequency of radiation that it tends to emit, right, the one with most intensity, tends to increase the more that we heat it. So at a low temperature, the frequency with the most intensity could be infrared. However, as we slowly heat the metal more, the intensity of infrared will decrease and more visible light is emitted instead. Visible light has a higher frequency than infrared. This is actually why a piece of really hot metal tends to look yellow. It starts out looking red and then slowly, slowly shifts to yellow the more we heat it, since yellow has a higher frequency than red. Logic dictates that the more we heat it, it would eventually turn green or even blue. But that would require a temperature of more than around 6000 Kelvin, which is much hotter than even the sun. That's why the sun is even just orange or yellow. Enter Max Planck. He introduces the concept of quantization, stating that perhaps the energy that was emitted from these black bodies was from a set of discrete values rather than from a continuous range. What does that mean? It means that the energy of a particular frequency, so infrared is a particular frequency, right? So the energy of infrared radiation can't just take any value within a given range, but rather only from a set of allowed ones. So maybe a value of 5 joules is allowed, 5.1 joules just isn't. This is seen in his famous equation, energy is equal to NHF, where H is Planck's constant, frequency is F, the frequency that we're looking at, and N is just an integer multiple. So that means that the energy that's emitted from a black body can only be an integer multiple of HF. It's like saying the weight of an object can only be odd numbers and nothing in between, only discrete values. So when we say quantization of a quantity, it means that that quantity can't just take any random value, but rather has a set of allowed ones which it can be. Let me give you a good way to wrap this around your head. It may seem a bit bizarre. So imagine a graph. If we have a curve on the graph, it has an infinite number of points on it, right? Since we could just keep on zooming and pick a random point. But the way this works is, let's say instead of plotting an entire curve, I plot a set of points on the graph. A set of points really close to each other, such that it forms a curve if I join them together. Now, when I look from afar, I will see a set of allowed points. That is what energy is. Energy can only take the value of those specific points and nothing in between. That's what it means to be discrete values instead of continuous. So in our timeline, we know that now that the energy that was emitted by these black bodies in the form of electromagnetic radiation seemed to be quantized somehow. Maybe it was the property of black bodies. Maybe they only emitted certain energies and not anything in between. But later, now in the 21st century, we find out that this is a general case for all energies. Energy in general is a quantized quantity. In fact, the reason why this went unnoticed for so long was that Planck's constant is an incredibly tiny value. Energy is quantized, but it's such a tiny scale that it seems continuous. So those dots that we plotted on our graph, imagine they were really, really close to each other. Incredibly close to each other. So when I looked at it from afar, it seems like a continuous curve. But when I zoom in, it's just a bunch of points plotted on the graph. Imagine a pixelated circle on your computer screen. It seems like a perfect circle, but you know that if you zoom in, it's nothing but a bunch of extremely tiny squares forming it. Energy works the same way. It seems continuous, but is discrete and quantized at an incredibly tiny level. 1905, Einstein's miracle year. The work that won him the Nobel Prize was what would go on to push quantum physics to its next crucial level. He studied what was known as the photoelectric effect. For now, just know that this was a phenomenon in which an electron is emitted from an object when light under certain circumstances strikes it. So basically, if I shoot light at an object under certain circumstances, it causes an electron to pop out. You know, what he noted was that light only above a specific frequency could eject an electron from the object, regardless of its intensity. Now think of this logically. What he proposed as an explanation for this was that light was comprised of a certain quanta, that it could be broken down into specific portions known as photons. This sounds sort of familiar. This was like Newton's corpuscular theory. So Einstein is basically saying that light is formed of particles again. But think about this logically. If I wanted to emit an electron from an object, it goes without saying that I would need a certain amount of energy to pop it out. And if light seemed to be doing this job for me, but only light above a certain frequency, it says that maybe frequency has something to do with energy. And it was only when these
photons that Einstein has been postulating had sufficient energy that it could knock out the electron from the object when they had sufficient energy equal to hf. Remember Planck's equation from before? Einstein's brought it back again and basically said that light was formed of these particles called photons, and each photon had a specific energy related to its frequency. The energy that it had was equal to hf. This formed the linkage between how the emission of an electron seemed to depend on the frequency of the light and energy. So remember, in our timeline, the assumption was that maybe only black bodies emitted quantized energy, that it was some property of black bodies. But now we know that it wasn't just that energy that was quantized, but also light in the form of these particles called photons. So in the wider community, we had Young that showed that light was a wave. And Einstein is now coming back with Newton's corpuscular theory and presenting it as a particle and giving quite convincing proof that it could be a particle. This is another fundamental concept in quantum mechanics, the thought that light was comprised of particles, yet still behaved as a wave, first solidifying the concept of wave-particle duality. If you aren't already familiar with the idea, wave-particle duality very literally means that something can behave as both a wave and a particle. Light is both a wave and a particle. So let's just summarize what we've come up with here. Two main thoughts that have come out from our discussion here. One is that light is both a wave and a particle, as shown by Einstein and Thomas Young. It exhibits this thing called wave-particle duality. That's thought number one. The second thought is that energy is quantized, and that light seems to be linked to that. The frequency of light determines its energy, inherent energy. And the fact that energy is also discrete, right? It's quantized. That means it can only hold certain values and nothing in between. Now, keeping in mind, we will move to the next most important discovery. Our story moves on to the year 1913. With the emergence of Bohr's atomic model. Now, we learn in middle school and in chemistry classes, right, that Bohr's model was what? It's a positive charged nucleus with set orbits for electrons to move around in, that electrons could inhabit these orbits. But that wasn't the most important part. What he said was that each orbit had a decided discrete energy level, and that whenever an atom absorbs or emits energy, an electron would instantaneously jump from one orbit to another to account for this change in energy. So let's provide some context into what he was trying to solve. Now, when we heat certain gases, right, like nitrogen or hydrogen, we notice that it gives off light, but only at specific discrete frequencies. So I may get green light and red light, but I will never see blue light there. So this was a problem in physics at the time, one that physicists would try to solve by studying hydrogen gas, because it's the most simplest gas, only one proton, one electron. Bohr solved this with his atomic model, suggesting that when an electron jumps from one orbit to another, it will absorb or emit a photon with an energy that compensates for the change in orbit. So, if an electron jumps to an orbit that was 5 joules less, it would emit a photon with an energy of 5 joules. Now remember what we said, these orbits are energy defined, they are discrete decided energy levels in every atom, and a photon, the energy that a photon has, depends on its frequency. So if only certain energy levels were being compensated for, if photons of only specific energies were being emitted, it shows how only discrete frequencies of light were being observed. Because green light, for example, let's say I observe only green light and no blue light. It means that the compensation and energy was only enough to give me green light and not blue light. Now, while many parts of his model were later proved wrong or changed, right, we study again in chemistry, it brought in the idea of the quantization of energy to electrons in atoms as well. Now, you're noticing we're using this term quantization a lot. We will use quanta, quantization, eventually quantum, right? And it's very important because a lot of qualities are now showing this property of quantization. In fact, more quantization of values was later found in this thing called spin of electrons.
as per the Stern-Gerlach experiment, which you can actually go look up. It's about magnetic spin. It's really interesting. So you can see how this concept is being found in many different qualities and particles. It's sort of forming a broader idea, the idea of quantum mechanics that we know of today. It's like small parts of the puzzle slowly, slowly fitting together and just waiting for someone to actually see the greater picture. But we are still nowhere close. 1924. French scientist Louis de Broglie published in his doctoral thesis a paper extending the concept of wave-particle duality to other particles, particularly electrons. Now, from a series of formulae governing momentum and energy of the quanta of light, de Broglie derived an equation. Now, Einstein had come up with a bunch of stuff studying light, right, and showed that light was both a wave and a particle. And de Broglie did a little playing around with the equations to come at one specific equation that links both the wave nature and the particle nature of something that exhibits wave-particle duality. Now, a quality of a wave is wavelength. That is something only a wave can have. And a quality related to particles is momentum. So a particle that's moving would have a momentum. And only a particle can have a momentum, not a standalone wave. And de Broglie came up with this one equation that links both the wavelength and the momentum of light. That wavelength was equal to Planck's constant divided by the momentum. So if I had a photon moving at a certain momentum, it would have a wavelength equal to Planck's constant divided by that momentum. Right? Very simple thing for de Broglie to come up with. Einstein already came up with the equations that led up to it. But what de Broglie suggested is that maybe this was true for matter particles as well. Maybe matter too behaved as both a wave and a particle. Maybe. If such a thing was true, an electron moving with a certain momentum would have a wavelength equal to Planck's constant divided by that momentum. A particle would have a wavelength equal to h by p. Quantum mechanics is moving further now, and we're getting to a very weird state in physics. To assume that matter particles such as electrons can be considered waves in the same way light can be considered a particle. Now, this was actually proven later by an experiment, but we'll come to that in a bit. After this, we would reach the world of wave mechanics. All the foundational ideas of quantum mechanics have been set. The wave-particle duality of both matter and light, and even discrete and quantized energy states. Now, many added to wave mechanics, the mathematics of quantum mechanics later. Erwin Schrödinger came up with superposition and the Schrödinger equation. Werner Heisenberg came up with a different way to look at wave mechanics using linear algebra and even the uncertainty principle. Max Born came up with the Born rule, some different way to look at the wave function in terms of probability waves. But all of this has become extremely mathematic-led, solidifying quantum mechanics as a popular theory amongst the physics community. However, with all these mathematics, differential equations, linear algebra, we've been working with the assumption that matter particles exhibit wave-particle duality, as per de Broglie's initial equation. But in 1927, we reach an important, crucial step in quantum mechanics where this is actually proven beautifully through an accidental experiment. So Davison and Germer take this nickel crystal, and through a popular accident, they will observe the diffraction of electrons. Now, diffraction is a thing that's a wave property. It's exclusive to waves, and it's such that we observe a pattern on the other side of the diffraction grating. So if you were to take a crystal and diffract, let's say, light through the crystal, we would observe a pattern on the other side. And this pattern can be actually observed and analyzed, and we can extract the wavelength of the wave that produced it. So if I see a diffraction pattern on my screen right now, I could do a bunch of calculations to find out the wavelength of what wave produced that pattern. So Davison and Germer saw that the electrons were actually getting diffracted on the nickel crystal, and they saw the pattern on the other screen, analyzed it, and calculated the wavelength of what would have produced that pattern. What did they find? That wavelength somehow seemed to match
de Broglie's original equation linking wavelength and momentum. So when they calculated the expected wavelength, they found that when they plugged it into the original equation of de Broglie, they could get the exact momentum of the electrons that they fired at the nickel crystal. How bizarre is that? It's a perfect example of how practical setups link with pure theory. And so we have finally proven that wave-particle duality exists in electrons. And quantum mechanics is not just based off an assumption, it's based off of weird proofs that we see in more and more experiments after this. And so quantum mechanics moves forward with a lot of breakthroughs in the mathematical world as well. We have Paul Dirac coming up with his Braquet notation, the Dirac delta, and the Dirac equation, which attempted to unify quantum mechanics with special relativity. Now we would reach the end of the saga. Quantum mechanics, as it stands today, is a popular theory. We obviously know that quantum mechanics is true, we just have no way of verifying an interpretation. There are many different interpretations for why particles behave the way they do, yet no one knows exactly why they do. And quantum mechanics also raises another problem in that it somehow causes problems with general relativity. Einstein's theory again. And no one has been able to come up with a unified theory linking both of these. Although there are popular contenders in quantum field theories, like string theory or quantum loop gravity. And there we end the grand tale. The journey of quantum mechanics all the way from black body radiation to Dirac notation. There is still a lot I haven't covered, like the Solvay conferences or the discrepancies between Bohr and Einstein. Perhaps that is something to discuss another day. See you next time on For the Love of Astrophysics.